Blog Talk Radio.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Well, that went well. Hi, folks. Mentor Sasquatch here with you this evening for the Uncommon Shaman, a celebration of all things that are off the beaten path, like myself. I like to think of myself that way anyway. And thank you for joining me here on blogtalkradio.com tonight. Please do check out some of our other programs on blogtalkradio.com. You can find them on the website. The flagship show is Chief Iggy with David Two Crows and Adriana Arts, or Adriana Arts, depending on who you listen to. And they'll take your questions and do your psychic readings on Mondays, starting at 6 or 7, depending on what else is going on. Best to just check the website and find all those other wonderful things that you can find here on the network. So, hi. Thank you for joining me this evening. Let me just reference here. I put up my... Well, let me tell you, I unexpectedly had to work the midnight shift last night. And I came home at about 8:30 in the morning, rather ripped, because I'm not used to it, and because I'm a lot older than I used to be when I used to do midnight shifts, and you know, have it not affect me. And it's the first one I've done for a while. So before I went to bed this morning, I put up the show, which means I go into the internet, onto blog. You know what I just I said? Blog Talk Radio is the overall program that has all the shows on our particular channels, withinsightsradio.com. So you want to go to withinsightsradio.com to get all those listings I was talking about. Excuse me for that. Anyway, before the show airs, we have to go on and tell Blog Talk Radio, you know, the name of the show, what time it's going to be on and all that. So this morning I put up the show, The Uncommon Shaman, Episode 14, Shiver Me Timbers, which is just something that popped into my head. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but a lot of my episode titles were like that. And then I have to type in a little description. Here's what I typed. At 8:30 in the morning, after having just worked the entire previous night and coming home with no sleep, it says here, Mudtoe deals with the stress, uncertainty of life as an on-call manager. So it sort of sounds like I'm someone who for whom English is a second language. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's what I think the impression I've given with my. But I discovered it later, and I left it there because I think it has a certain charm to it. In any case, I think I am going to, for comfort's sake, I am at my folks' place tonight. So let me, I'm going to set the computer up here. I'm going to go over here and sit in the easy chair because I want the show to be nice and easy. And here we are. This might be the world's most uncomfortable easy chair. It's my mother obtained it at a garage sale. And it is... It sat in various different places in the house, and now it is now it's sitting in the corner of the guest room where I sleep when I'm here. And it occurred to me, I'm not sure that I have ever actually used this chair, again, because my mother and my father always speak of how uncomfortable it is. So I just avoided it. And in fact, generally when I'm here, I use it to stack stuff up. I put my garment bag and other various things I'm carrying with me, and I just stack it up on the chair because I don't intend to use it. But I know my father uses it quite a bit because here it's in a far corner, and you look into the other corner of the room, and my brother has set up a television set, and this is where my dad comes in to watch television. When someone else, which would be my mother, 99% of the time, is using the television in the living room, because my father, my brother, has his own television downstairs, and then there is a fourth television in I don't know what you would call it. I guess it's a television room. That's really how it's in, but it's a smaller television. And actually, that's where my mother sleeps. It's my mother's bedroom, and there's a television in there. It was always my room when I was growing up, and it was my brother's room when he was growing up. And then in the time-honored tradition of American families. They turned it into a television room after we had both left. Now my brother lives here again. He lives down in the basement, and when I stay here, I stay in the guest room. And now you know far more about the sleeping arrangements at my parents' house than you ever needed to know. But the thing is, I'm sitting here, my father always uses this chair, and it occurred to me, it might be nice. So I sit here, I figure I'll do the show from the chair, and perhaps review it at the end, review the chair, or review my show, either one. But what did I wish to talk about? I very seldom know when I pick up the phone. I have only the vaguest idea of what I'm going to talk about. And often it shows. If you've listened to the show before, I speak at the direction of spirit, and I only hope that my words and my intentions align with the intention of spirit. So I need to be open to whatever it is that comes to me as I'm sitting here. And doing the show and in the hope that there's someone out there who needs to hear these words, and that's why they're coming to me. So when I was setting up for the show, as I usually do, I sit on the bed and use the computer and do that, and I use my laptop. I looked over at the chair, and my father had been using it earlier in the evening watching the baseball game, which was still on until just a few months ago. And then got up so that I could use the room. I think he went. He takes a walk before he goes to bed. It's about time for bed anyway. So my mother, I think, actually is still in there now, watching the in the living room with the big TV, watching the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. But anyway, as I was, my father had just gotten up and left, and as I'm sitting here preparing to do the show, just couldn't be sit in the chair and do the show from the chair. Now, I have no idea what this means. If it means anything, it just occurred to you when that idea, I hesitate to call it inspiration. I don't know what that is. I think you have to kind of assign those labels later on. But when that idea occurs to me, and it's something that I can do, go up on the roof, I probably wouldn't try to do that if that occurred to me. Go outside has occurred to me a number of times. Probably most notably during the blackout a few years back. And that was a scary time to be sitting out on your porch. I would have much rather been inside hiding. Though I didn't see any marauders or zombies or anything of that nature. It was just very disconcerting to see, real darkness on the street, no street lights or anything. I just sort of took that and ran with it to show me what is the purpose of sort of hearing that voice in my head saying, do the show outside. I think there's a practical consideration, too, now that I think about it. It was very hot. There's no power out. There was no air conditioning. So it was marginally cooler with an occasional breeze outside. So maybe that was more what spirit was thinking of, come outside, it's hot. I don't want to sit with you inside that in the house. I remember during that time also jumping into the shower every 20 minutes, dousing cold water on myself, and then jumping in my bed and trying to fall asleep before it got hot again. And eventually I abandoned the dead and darkened city and came right here to my folks' house. But first I had to find a gas station because my car was running on fumes. And I got on Facebook. I went to my office. My office on campus. They had power on campus. And I thought, they need to build a wall or something because at some point people are going to come storming the place because they've got power and air conditioning. But anyway, I went to my office and got on Facebook. And there was a Facebook page where they were listing places in our city that were open. They had gas stations and grocery stores and other places that people might need. In other words, say, okay, this place is open. They've got power and they're open. So there was, I found a gas station listed that was pretty near where I lived, and buzzed down there. It was a kind of a crapshoot. If they were right, if they were wrong, I was probably going to run out of gas because I had very little. And I drove down there and they were open. And I did get my tank of gas, and I did flee from the Dark City for about a week until they got all the lights back on, because that neighborhood where I lived, which is just north of the university, is a very old neighborhood. And they have lots of tall trees hanging over the power lines, and lots of old houses, and lots of very, you know, some frequently overtaken, you know, power boxes, power lines, you know, wires on top of wires on top of wires. And so not only does it take longer to fix that, they always wait until last to go to those areas because they know it's going to take them a long time, and they want to hit the areas where they can get the power to the most people most quickly. So it was about a week before they got the lights back on in my apartment. And I guess the lesson of that was that I lost a whole bunch of food. That tends to be, I buy a lot of food and with the best of intentions of cooking for myself, and then it sits in my cabinet or in my freezer, as the case may be. And with the power off, I lost everything that I had in the fridge and the freezer, had to throw it out. I said, well, there's a lesson learned, and I don't know if I've actually learned it or not, because I haven't had that experience yet. Well, that's not quite true, because I had to move, and I had to throw out a lot of food from my freezer when I moved, because I just didn't have a way to move it. You know, there's a wonderful example of how things work on the show, because that doesn't have anything to do with what I intended to talk about, all that I talk about the blackout and what was going on. Although maybe it does, because I wanted to talk about stress, and there's stressful things that are happening in my life, and certainly that was a stressful time. Not just because of the blackout, because I was also knew that my job at Ohio State was going to come to an end. It was very unusual because they informed me 6 weeks beforehand that they weren't going to be renewing, so my contract was based on the academic year. And starting in September, I was told I wasn't going to have a job. They told me this like in mid-July. So it was like the long goodbye, just kind of going through week by week by week, trying to sort of close out things, because they weren't going to replace me. They weren't going to hire a new person to take my position. So I was just trying to put things in a place where, you know, some other graduate student might come along and be able to pick it up. I remember in her letter to me, the dean said, if the graduate students can't pick it up, the professors may pick up some of those responsibilities. I thought, that will be the day when the professor goes and sets up a demonstration for themselves. But anyway, I digress. We're talking about what I originally talked about was coming off of that thing I opened with about I got a call and I had to go. I had to get. I was asleep. I was in bed. I had to get up, get dressed, go to work, and work a shift. And that's a stressful thing. It sort of gives you, there's a lack of control over your life, and I think I talked about that some last week, because I had just come back from the marching band show, the Ohio State marching band show, and they had played with the Columbus Orchestra. It was a great show, and they had fireworks and all of that. But, the whole time it was difficult for me to completely relax, because I have my work cell phone with me, and that thing could go off at any time. And it went off yesterday, and I can't tell you the details because it's confidentiality and all that stuff. And certainly I believe in keeping our clients' business their own business. So I can't, and it's sort of difficult when I relate these stories because I can't share any details except for the fact that I had to go in on a very short notice. And it really wasn't an issue early on when I was doing this, but then I think it's like anything else. You the experiences kind of come at you in clumps. So I've had to go in either on a late night or a weekend 5 times in the last 2 weeks, I don't want to sit here and whine. I have a job. It's a good job. It's an important job. I do work that I like. I do work that's important. I work with these MRDD clients and help them out, make their life a little easier. It's work that not a lot of people will do. It's not the most strenuous work I could do with this. I used to do the direct care staff. I'm administration now. But, I feel what I do is very important to their welfare, and one of the things I need to do. I said, now, see, I can't even tell you this part because this could infringe on their privacy. But certain interactions with the community, but really all interactions with the community, most of our clients would need help with. And if there's certain emergency interactions, I won't go any further than that, but certain things that have to be taken care of right away require my presence, you know, 24/7 when the need arises. So the phone rings and I have to go and help get the need covered. So, you know, I'm hoping for the time when things even out, as they always do. We'll have a nice long period of quiet, and I can recharge my batteries and get back to my more mundane paperwork kind of duties. But it's I value the experience of the last 2 weeks because there's highs and lows, and I like to I like to have that kind of control over my life where everything is sort of even. That's happening. It's just, you know, I know like 2 or 3 days in advance what's going to happen. And I know I'm going to be in this place, and I'm prepared to go to this place, and I'm going to be outside, I'm going to be inside, however it works, you know, and it's sort of everything kept on a very even keel. And when it's disturbing to me, not just on a mental level, but on a physical level, you know, I'll begin to feel physically ill when there's a lot of rapid change and unpredictability, which is what I've been experiencing. So it's an opportunity for me to learn, you know, on a personal level, to learn how to deal with that more effectively than just, you know, sitting around and pouting about it. And then also to be, you know, to realize that it helps that there's a task. You know, if it was just random stuff happening, there's a drumming event I want to go to, but, you know, the schedule doesn't work out well for me. Or it's outdoors in February, and I don't want to go outdoors in February. And just things that, mostly things that have to do with schedule, for heaven's sakes, bother me. And then this experience comes up where the client has a very real issue that he cannot address himself. I have to help him. And if I don't help him, it's not going to get addressed. So there's responsibility attached to it. And that has sort of two simultaneous effects, first of which is it makes it more important. It makes it vital that I perform and that I don't allow, you know, I don't allow a pity party for myself to ensue. But at the same time, you know, where that provides me motivation, it's also a source of anxiety. So the very thing that's spurring me on to fight this feeling of anxiousness is also producing the anxiousness. I was ruminating on that as I was waiting to get news back about one of our clients, and I had taken him. And again, I can't tell you. I think you probably guessed what I'm talking about. But taking news you go very very quickly for what one might call an emergency to have some emergency related stuff. Yeah, I shouldn't. That's actually, I kind of went too far there. But anyway, you're waiting to hear news and you try to occupy yourself. Speak for myself. I try to occupy myself, and these things were running through my head about the role of anxiety in creating my distress at the same time that anxiety spurs my motivation to improve. So do I want to channel that in some way? Do I want to push that anxiety towards the motivation side? Or do I want to leave it alone because maybe it's actually working okay on its own, and it's just the sort of ill effects, the negative effects of the anxiety that I need to deal with. Interesting things to think about. Maybe not. Maybe it's only interesting for me. Maybe it's only interesting for me and one other person out there who needs to be hearing these words. Because the words aren't mine. And when I try to produce the words, they're terrible. Spirit produces the words, and I just speak them as I sit in my father's easy chair. This is actually nice. I don't mind this chair. I guess the bad thing about it is you kind of sink into it. You know, it's all broken down in the middle, so it doesn't really hold your butt up the way it should. And I'm kind of slumped down, so it's hard with that kind of arrangement. It's hard to sit up straight in the chair, so it's bad for my posture. So I can imagine if I sat here for hours on end, I might start to get some of that numbness that you get when you're not. When you're not seated properly, you're not supported properly. But perhaps that's the source of this report of discomfort. Now, what's happened here is, you know, I have the Blog Talk interface up on my laptop. It tells me all kinds of things that are happening at the radio show, including how much time is left. But I neglected to turn the screensaver off. So that's going on, and I can no longer see it. And it's, you know, several feet from me. I'm actually going to have to struggle my way out of this for at least the moment, reasonably comfortable easy chair, make my way across the room, not really across the room, halfway across the room, and clear the screensaver and see what's going on. And it's, according to this, I have 8 more minutes to figure out what to talk to you about. Shiver me timbers. Wondering what the inspiration for that might have been. I was trying to think of something that is related somehow to fear. It's hard for me to, as I said, this came after a sleepless night, a totally sleepless night. It's hard for me to reproduce what was going on at that time. I was, through most of my life, I've always tolerated, well, as a teenager, I was an insomniac. And there were times I'd be up 2 or 3 nights in a row with no sleep. And it didn't seem to affect me all that much. Of course, as you get older, your body changes, your sensibilities change. I did, you know, I was always one where I could always stay up late and watch the Vincent Price movie, the Dracula movie or whatever it was on. But as you age, as I age, I'll speak for myself, those capabilities such that they start to disappear, and you one recognizes the value of a good afternoon nap. You know, before I was working again, I was out of work for 3.5 years. Out of, you know, didn't have regular 40-hour-a-week type work, and during that time, I would catch a nap, an afternoon nap, just about every day. About the only time I wouldn't would be when I was working at the hospital, work with medical students. They're helping to train medical students. I'd pretend to be sick, and they had to figure out what was wrong with me. And on the big events would last all day. So on those days, I generally wouldn't get a chance to nap. But other days, boy, I just take me a nice snooze right in the middle of the day, and that set me up for the evening. And now it's not possible for me to do that because it's working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. And sometimes I get home, I just ripped. All I want to do is say the writing has suffered. My social life has suffered. I actually signed up for Match.com and haven't done a thing with it. I actually haven't paid for it. So they keep sending me these emails saying, this, you know, Eloise thinks you're great. And I said, why are you showing my name around to people when I haven't paid you yet? And that's what I think I think that they're making this up, frankly. I don't think they're actually showing my name to anyone. These are ads to encourage me to pay my money. And it's not, you know, I signed up on a whim. And as much as I would, you know, like to be pursuing something right now, I think I need for I have to figure this whole work thing out, and how my life and this whole on-call thing are going to fit together. If they're going to fit together at all. I mean, if, you know, there are times in the last 2 weeks when I thought, I just can't do this. But I have done it. I've survived, and I'm glad I have. You know, I hear stories about, you know, the big turnover at this industry that I'm working in, and that 1 year is considered an accomplishment. 1 year of seniority at one place is a fair proportion of people don't make it that long. And I actually had somebody ask me today, because I had worked the whole. They knew I'd worked the whole night, and then I had to come back for a little while during the day. And I was asked, so you think you're going to make it to the 1 year? I don't know. I'd like to think so. My plan, and, you know, we know what happens to the plan, but my plan is to pursue this position for at least the next 5 years, and then look for something that's in the nonprofit sector, because that'll help me to dump my student loan before I go on Social Security and won't be able to pay it. And, you know, they have the power. This is the student loan people have the power to attach your Social Security, but no one has ever tried to do it yet. But I think there's probably going to be a large proportion of student loan recipients like myself who are going to be hitting that, you know, that age here in the next 15, 20 years, and see if our loan servicing people, because it's not the government who services your loan, there's a series of private corporations that do it. And I have yet to pay a dime on my student loans, just because I haven't had any income. Now, once this year is over with and I have to reapply for my income-based repayment plan, which again has always been zero because I have little income, next year it won't be. Next year I will actually be, that will continue for the rest of my life, because I don't make enough money. I'd have to make probably close. I think I actually had to get into six figures or close to it to be able to get any money on the principal. But as long as I'm where I am now, which is mid five figures, I will be paying on the interest only. But then the interest isn't supposed to be capitalized, so I don't know exactly how that works. But anyway, extremely, extremely unlikely that my student loan will be paid off before I hit Social Security, or indeed before I transition to the next life. So I think it behooves me to explore, you know, possibilities for getting that loan forgiven, and one of them is to work at a nonprofit or a government organization for 10 years. So reasonably, you know, I work for my present job for 5 years, and then get, you know, this one of those qualifying jobs for 10 years, and then I can make the application before I go on Social Security. That's the plan. Now, best laid plans with mice and men and all that. I'm gonna have to find a way to deal with this anxiety if I'm gonna make that work. So we are running out of time. Thank you for listening. I hope something in there struck a chord with you. I hope you will come back next week when we'll be either talking about something else, or we'll be talking about the same thing, one or the other. And the week after that, we'll be doing Shaman Tarot, which is always a load of fun. So once again, thanks for listening, and have a pleasant good evening.